Hey, everybody. This is Joe Taylor from SpinMe.com. Let's do a quick roll call. Who's on the line with us today?
Danielle Serino from Fox News.
Hi, Danielle. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Great. And who else is on the call with us today?
Michael Markson with 3 Miles Out.
Michael, welcome. Anybody else on the line so far?
Robin Hemet.
Hi, Robin. How are you?
Thanks.
Excellent. Who else has joined us?
Dr. Oakley here.
Oh, little train wreck there. Let's go one at a time.
Are we just waiting? Who wants to jump in first?
Basically, here's where we are. It's just now the top of the hour. My name again is Joe Taylor from SpinMe.com. I want to welcome a whole lot of folks to this call who I think it's the first time they've ever been to one of our conference calls. And as you may have heard, and we posted this to our newsletter and to the weblog earlier today, it doesn't look like our invited guest, Carlo Odo from Talent 2K, is going to be joining us today. At the very last moment, he sent some messages along stating that he's reconsidered, and it's unlikely that he's going to be here. So what we're going to do is open up the floor to talk about basically any questions that you have about what kinds of services or projects or things are effective to move your band forward in the music industry, or any general questions that you might have that I can answer for you. This is a little sample of the kind of thing that we do every so often at SpinMe.com and at our sister website, IndieBiz.com. What I like to do at the top of these calls is just get a sense of who's on the call and if there's anything in particular that folks want to get out of the call. And so if there's anybody that we haven't heard from yet that wants to chime in and say hello, let us know your name, where you're calling from, and if there's something specific you want to take away from today's call.
I guess the question, this is Danielle from Fox. I guess the question I wanted to know is, has anybody had experience with the company, let's not say Talent 2K or 97 Radio, but a company like that that's helped them take a band to the next level?
That's a great question, Danielle, and I think that if in a moment, if we have anybody on the call that's got some specific experience, there's unfortunately, there are a lot of companies out there, and this, I think, is a little more prevalent in the modeling industry than it is in the recording industry, though we're starting to see a lot of those same kinds of companies emerge. And the idea here is that there's a real gray area between what is, quote-unquote, a scam or a sham versus what's a fee for service. And the question really comes down to, what do these services promise? What do they deliver? And is the way in which they make these promises and in the way in which they make these services available, is that unethical? Is it immoral? Is it a bad business practice? And what we're seeing a lot of are these companies that will tell folks, first and foremost, that we can get you signed, we can get you a record deal, we can get you this, that, or the other. And all you have to do is pay this fee up front. Now, legitimate talent agencies and legitimate booking agencies generally do not ask for an advance fee. If you're going to work on their roster, if you're going to have business that's going to make that agency money down the road, the most that they'll typically ask for is a very small fee to cover some overhead expenses to set up the project. For instance, at my agency, we will charge for a new booking client the greater of 10% or $50, the idea being that when you're first getting started, it's very difficult to have a gig that's going to generate enough money to warrant paying for a booking agent. The real question comes down to this. Do any of these things actually result in getting signed, getting these deals? And we're finding that 99.9% of the time the answer is no. So my focus and in my writing and in what I talk about in seminars and workshops is the fact that to make a living making music, to bring it back to musicians, you've got to develop a really intimate, personal relationship with your audience that's going to support you over time. And when you've done that, the record deal, if you want that, and there's a school of thought that I'm a part of right now that a record deal is not necessarily the way to a stable financial future, but that stuff will follow if you've got that relationship with your audience. Let me open it up to the floor and have you guys respond to Danielle's question. Has anybody had experience with an agency like this that's resulted in moving to the next level?
Definitely not.
Has anybody had the opposite experience?
Well, yeah, we were with 97 Radio. We signed on for them just to try it out for about, I think it was a 500. And, you know, it was a big letdown when it actually happened because they let us on for about 3 months saying, oh, yeah, it's going to happen. We pumped up people in Arizona. We pumped up people in Los Angeles and a few other cities. And, you know, there was a lot of people ready to go. And then all of a sudden when we had to say 3 days before it was about to start that, you know, well, it's not happening, you know, that did set us back. It set us way back. Because, you know, everybody's like, oh, these guys, you know, they came off like they're for real, and now they're just, oh, it's canceled, so, you know, forget about them. So, yeah, it took us back a few steps, but, I don't know.
It's really frustrating.
How much money did you lose with them?
Excuse me?
How much money did you lose with them?
It was pretty small. It was only $500. Hmm. I've heard of bands getting taken up in the 1,000 area. 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, so, you know. And we've been fighting for a refund. Carl even said, oh, yeah, everybody gets a refund and asks for it. And then when we asked for it, he said, no, the company denied it. So, I don't know. It was shady.
I think the frustrating thing, there's frustration on two levels. One is, for emerging musicians, $500 is a lot of money. And it's a big deal because you guys will scrimp and save and go without stuff to put that $500 together that you could get so much more out of that investment in so many other areas. And even working with legitimate companies, there's a question of what results are you going to get for whatever investment you put in? And I think any company that you work with, whether it's a company like Talent 2K or even a company like mine, the question you should be asking is, what specific return on investment am I going to get? And who else have you worked with that I can see that has gotten that specific return? And I think one of the issues that, as I've investigated this and as other journalists have investigated this, the businesses like this, without naming any one specific business, operate primarily by phone. They operate outside of the internet, and it's amazing to think that such a thing is really possible these days. But the core of this kind of business happens because people are responding to ads in the back of magazines. They're calling 800 numbers, and that number could lead anywhere to anyone. And when you get someone on the phone who is an exceptional salesperson, you come off that call being told everything that you want to hear, feeling that your needs are getting met, and feeling really confident about things. But if you then take your research to the internet and try to triangulate the data, as we talk about in journalism school, for instance, when you try and do triangulation, find folks that have had success, find other clients, you see with these companies that there aren't success stories, or the ones that are there have some holes in the background. There's some holes in the data that fall through. And that's one of those big red flags that before you should sign a check or send a credit card over, you should be very upfront with whatever agency you're working with and ask, who are you working with right now? And can we contact them? Can we see results? Is there coverage of this band? Do they thank you on their site anywhere? Do they even list you as a contact? These are all red flags that if you see a company that's promising you the world, but they don't have a track record, unless it's someone that tells you right up front, I'm new at this, I've just come out of a career in this other industry and I'm trying this, or I used to work at so-and-so records and I just hung my shingle out. But even then, you should be able to trace back that person's history, their results, their coordinates, their contacts, etc. And if you can't, that's a big warning sign that they might not be able to deliver what they're promising. Anybody have any follow-up questions to that, or any other questions that you, or things that you'd like to talk about on the call?
Yeah, have you heard of any companies that are actually good and legit who do this kind of service? Because I've heard of several that are, you know, shitty, so to speak. But are there any companies out there that actually do good work for bands and help them out and that you know of?
Well, what's the exact result that you want to get?
We're not looking for record deal or anything like that. That carries with it a lot of negative things as well. Just basically exposure and booking.
Sure.
Contacts with radio stations is basically the avenue we want to pursue.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the kinds of service agencies that do exist for artists. And for folks who are part of our Indie Biz members, there is a recording of a presentation I made at our boot camp that talks about your success team, and I'll refer you guys to that rather than rehash all of that presentation. But for those of you who aren't part of that, let me just run down really quick. As an emerging artist, as a working musician, you want to build a success team of folks that can do the things that you're either not capable of doing yourself or the things that you don't want to do yourself. And basically, I like to think that anything that keeps you from spending time writing music or performing music or working on your craft is something that you can probably delegate to somebody else. Now, I don't advocate you guys giving control over things completely. You should be, first and foremost, a manager of your own career. But you want to find ways to eliminate all the stuff from the fringe so that most of your time as a musician is spent making music. That's what your audience is attracted to you. Your audience doesn't really know or care that you're good at getting gigs for yourself. They just know your music and care for that. Now, there are a couple different things that go on. For instance, let's work backwards. The last person that you'll usually attract to your success team is a manager. And the reason they're the last person that you attract is because managers work on commission. And until you're making about $100,000 a year, there's not enough of a financial benefit for a professional manager to actually step in and be involved with you. So one of the things that I tell folks is that it's usually easier in this day and age to find someone that you already know and trust and love and train them to become a really good manager for you than it is to actually find a manager that's a professional manager that you can learn to trust. So keep that in mind. Now, stepping back, one of the more important steps for you to, the more important folks to bring onto your success team is a booking agent. And I do booking as part of our agency, and booking agents are faced with a lot of competition, not among booking agents, but among bands who want to be booked. Now, it's another scenario where, because booking agents are working on commission, it's really competitive to get onto a roster because there are not that many booking agents. And once again, you have to be already showing folks that you are sustaining enough gigs, enough revenue already to make it attractive for a booking agent to be involved with you. Again, because they're working on commission. Now, if you have...
What are they working...
Excuse me?
I was going to say, where do they get their commission from? Are you talking about income, like as in T-shirt and CD sales, or are you talking income from what we get paid from clubs and from venues to play?
Well, let me break that down for both managers and booking agents. A manager is going to collect a commission, a percentage of all of your gross revenue from everything. So that would include merchandise sales, that would include concert tickets, that includes record sales, royalties, everything. So a manager, typically in the industry standard is 15%. So if you have anybody ever approach you with anything, you know, and I've heard of, and people have come to my seminars and said, we had somebody approach us and say, all we need to bring this manager on board is to give them 50% of whatever happens. No, that's not the case. Professional managers, generally, I've heard of professional managers going as high as 20%, maybe even 25%. Beyond that, big red flag. Now, a booking agent is going to take a commission just off of what you make at your performance from the door, from ticket sales. A booking agent generally is not going to try and commission your merchandise sales or your CD sales or anything else. So a booking agent's job is to go and get you the best deal possible to get you a booking where you're going to make a lot of money, because the more you make at the door, the more they make at the end of the night too. So like I said, there's agencies kind of like mine that are hybridizing so that they have an element of a virtual assistant practice built in. And for bands that maybe aren't yet making enough money to justify a booking agent that works on straight commission, you have agencies now that are opening up to emerging bands and doing it for a flat fee. Again, our agency charges $50 per gig, and that covers, just basically covers our expenses to go out and find a gig for the right client. In certain cases, when we know that there's something really difficult or very bizarre about a situation, we might negotiate something higher. We have one or two clients where we've done other packages, but we're very clear about the services that we're providing and letting people know, you know, we use technology that people can track the hours that we're spending and et cetera, et cetera. But a booking agent generally is going to commission only your the revenue that is generated from gigs that they're booking for you. So be wary of folks that are asking for more than 15%. In New York and California, agents have to be licensed, and one of the license regulations is they've got to keep their commissions under 10%. So keep that in mind, too, if you guys are in New York or California.
For a booking agent, you mean?
Exactly.
Oh, wow, okay.
And that has to do with that 10% is a cap imposed upon agencies by musicians' unions. So it came out of folks that book, say, session musicians or actually a lot of orchestral musicians that got together and really fought hard for that cap. But this is why when you have somebody that crawls out of the woodwork and says, oh, we'll represent you, but it'll be a 33% or a 50% commission, you can tell them that, you know, they're full of it, that's not the norm. Now, let me talk to you a little bit about another service that's out there, and that's called tape shopping. I think tape shopping, personally, is one of the least productive things that anybody's into. And it harkens back to a time in the industry when it was very difficult for people to produce albums. And therefore, getting that record deal was really important, and getting a record deal was the only way that you would get an album produced. So what happened in the 60s and 70s and 80s was that there's a subset of folks that hang on to the music industry, accountants, attorneys, other service folks that have connections. And what emerged was a subculture of folks that would say, well, hey, I'm already very well connected to all these people. In exchange for a percentage of whatever comes out of our work together, I will put your tape on the desks of my contacts. I will shop this tape around for you. And if you get a deal out of it, you'll reward me with a couple of points off of the deal that you make with the label. Now, that in and of itself is a completely fair arrangement. However, there are some folks out there that have really perverted this and taken this idea and turned it into some really ludicrous arrangements. I've had one client that's approached me again and again telling me about opportunities that people have presented to them to shop a tape, and they say all we want in return is 50% of whatever the revenue is generated from your record deal. And that is completely ludicrous. The most I would ever say, and that would involve kind of twisting my arm behind my back, if one of my management clients came to me with a tape shopping agreement, the most I would ever release would be 20% of the deal, and I would want to make sure that that was what we call non-recoupable. What happens a lot of times in these tape shopping deals is that, let's say you do get signed, and the tape shopper gets some ludicrous amount, like 30 or 40 or 50%. In the accounting at the record label, that money is deducted before the artist gets paid. So in many cases, that's one of those tipping points that causes an artist to be upside down on a deal. Even if their record goes platinum, they can end up owing a label hundreds of thousands of dollars because they're locked into this bizarre tape shopping agreement. I find that the only folks that you should work with as tape shoppers are people that will do it either on a flat fee basis or on a percentage basis, and it's non-exclusive. You can't, and it has to be tracked directly to their actions. They have to provide you some facility that allows you to track back to what it is that they did to get you that deal. And most importantly, it must be non-exclusive. It can't be a situation where if you get a deal on your own merits, they shouldn't be able to benefit from it. So there are a handful of legitimate tape shoppers out there that do have track records. It's just very difficult to get on their radar. And in this day and age, you can accomplish a lot of the same stuff on your own in terms of getting a record made and promoted and distributed. Okay, let me come down off the pulpit for a moment. folks who are clients of mine that come to my calls regularly know that it's easy to wind me up and get me off on a rant. So let's have somebody else talk for a moment. Who wants to chime in with any follow-up questions? For folks joining the call, my name again is Joe Taylor. I'm the editor at SpinMe.com, and I'm the principal of Taylor Creative Management in Athens, Georgia, and I work with bands that want to make more money making music. We had invited Carlo Odo from Talent 2K to join us on this call today, and he has declined our request because he expressed to me the desire to not ultimately not to do this in a public forum. I expressed to him my concern that the best way to allay people's fears about his company and the work that he's been doing would be to come out in a live, unedited, unfiltered forum and speak directly with me and directly with folks. And he was very much into that until a few messages that I got when I returned from a short trip a few days ago. And unless he's here and chimes in, we can only assume that he does not want to speak with you all.
Is everybody that's on this call right now had some involvement in some way with Colorado?
I don't.
Danielle, are we losing you?
No, I'm here, Joe. I want to know how many people do we have about on the line right now?
We should have somewhere around 50 people on the line, if my monitor is correct.
And is the general consensus that people are calling in because they want to find out about Carlo Otto and his business and have had problems with it, or are these people who have something positive to say about it?
Let's do this. If there's anyone who wants to chime in and talk about a positive experience that they've had with either 97 Radio or Talent 2K or any company like this, let's have them step up and chime in. If you don't feel comfortable giving your name, that's fine, but let's hear at least one voice that's going to step up and tell folks about the positive experience that they've had. And once again, we hear the sound of crickets chirping in the background. This is exactly the reason that I wanted to do the call in this format, because when Carlo contacted me, he was extremely concerned that his business was being portrayed on my website and on others in a very negative light. And as a former and still occasional journalist, my feeling, the ombudsman in me, wanted to make sure that both sides of the story were being told. So I wanted to, in very explicit terms, when I spoke with Carlo on the phone, I wanted him to make sure that when he came to this call, he had his supporters in tow. and that it would be a very excellent way for him to show that there are customers out there that are getting value out of his service. And what I told him in very explicit terms, again, was that if there are customers out there that are receiving value for this service, let's hear from them. Let's hear from someone that's having a positive experience so that we can tell this story. But again, we're in a situation where the research that I and other folks like John Foxworthy have done, and John Foxworthy at GarageRadio.com has been covering this story for a while. You can see his posts on our site at spinme.com. Just run a search on Foxworthy. And, you know, we've tracked down something like 1,200 complaints that are still unresolved at various Better Business Bureaus. But we can't find a single artist who will step up publicly and say, I've benefited from this service. And we would love to find at least one. So folks like Danielle and I would love to talk with you. So if you're not comfortable coming onto the call, you know, contact my office or contact Danielle or someone. We would love to hear from you.
Not to just focus on the negative. I'm just trying to get a feel of where these bands are around the country, and if you could give me some idea of how much money you invested in him.
This is Mike. I have a client that signed up with them, and I was wondering, for one, was there anybody that did go on with Talent 2K or 97 Radio, and as with my clients, they actually got signed up, went ahead and were contacted by three separate, I'm going to say, so-called record labels, and I was wondering if anybody, I'm going to put those names out if that's all right, and want to see if there's any other names that were actually contacted by them, and my clients were actually sent directly, you know, they were solicited by Talent 2K, not responding to an ad or anything like that. They were physically sent a letter, you know, saying that they've gotten their material, they were interested, and did a lot of research. However, you know, we all know where it's ended, but the only companies that were ever gotten back from was one called Jet Speed Records, another one called Deftone Records, and then a Black Rose Productions. Now, is there any other companies that, you know, anybody's received any contacts from? And then even with these companies here, when you ask them, how did you find out about, you know, this particular band, they will not tell you. In other words, they won't tell you how they've gotten contact, but as we all know through the research, there seems to be some sort of tie-in between all of these, you know, companies.
I think that what you're describing is a really common scenario for this particular organization, and I think for this type of company in general. You know, there are companies like this that are operating under the radar still, and folks that will call up artists because, again, you guys, when I meet emerging musicians at my workshops and seminars, the words that a lot of folks want to hear are, "Hi, my name is Fred. I am from Big Giant Record Company, and we have the giant lottery check for $1 million, and all your troubles are over." And that's something that I think we all have deep inside of us. We want someone, you know, we want, you know, the deus ex machina, you know, someone's going to show up and take care of all our needs, and we're going to get to do everything that we want to do, spend our time the way that we want to. And I think all of those things are possible. It takes a lot of hard work to get to that point, but you can have all those needs met. The frustrating thing for me working with emerging musicians is that the nature of these companies to have set this thing up, I think that, let's make a lateral move, a little bit of a segue. One of the biggest issues that folks are having with the particular company that we're talking about is that they put together this guarantee, and the idea is that if you don't get at least the offer of a deal, then you don't have to pay. And what happens is, let's assume for the moment, and from what I understand, the company actually does send out a number of packages to various record labels, major labels, as well as independent labels, And we've triangulated that there are people at these companies that get these packages, but it's not that they're placed directly on the desk of a high-ranking official there. They come into the slush pile with everything else. So one of the things that one could do to reframe this type of service would be to say, instead of having to do all this stuff yourself, we'll do it for you. And instead of promising that you're definitely going to get a deal from someone, they could simply frame it up as a secretarial service almost, or a virtual assistantship, where we'll reduce your paperwork, we'll reduce the strain on your packing hands, and we'll send these things out on your behalf. I think a service like that could be framed up as a very helpful and legitimate thing. But you put on top of it the fact that you're being promised a deal, and if you don't get one, you're going to be upset, and there's going to have to be a refund. So now you have these three phantom companies that come into play. And to the extent that they've actually released some records, folks that I've talked to at various distribution companies, whether or not they've actually released some records, it's hard to track them down because we can't even find histories of these companies releasing anything. You know, even records that I've put out on my own label, you can go into a Tower Records and type that in and special order it, you know? But these companies, you can't go into a Tower and put Deftone Records into the system and have anything come up. So that's, I think, the problem that folks are having the most, where these kind of phantom companies come out of the woodwork. They offer really unattractive deals. And for the folks who are savvy enough to say, this deal is not attractive to me, as soon as you turn down the deal, all of a sudden you've voided the warranty, basically, and you can't get that money back. And that's where the biggest frustration lies, I think, for most folks. Does that about sum up the experience of people who've been dealing with this? Anybody have anything to add?
Well, we didn't get the offer. We never got a phone call like that, and they still declined our request for the refund.
Well, there you go. There's an even bigger problem right there. So,
where are you from, and how much did you submit to him?
Los Angeles, $500.
Anybody else who did the same thing? Can you tell me where you're from and how much you submitted?
My group is out of the Cleveland area, Cleveland, Ohio area, and it was about $500. But I'm under the assumption now that nobody has been contacted by anybody but one of these three companies. That was my main question throughout that, is that there's never been a contact from any other company but these three.
If there has been, we have yet to find out about it.
So in other words, these are the only three companies that have ever contacted any of the artists out of Talent 2K or 97 Radio then.
If this is Danielle, I'm going to jump in for a minute because I interviewed a band that Carlo had sent me to. The band is called Betty Neals. They're out of Indiana. And they said that they got two record deals from Statue Records in Santa Monica and Jaybird Records in Connecticut. They had to pay to record their own album. That was about $1,200. And they released it through their online site.
And Danielle, this is David Hooper. Do you guys know about Jaybird Records?
I don't know anything about Jaybird Records. I just know that this band had said that was the record they recorded with.
It's a sort of legitimate record label. They came out about 7 or 8 years ago, and it was the guy who did that album called Chant. Do you remember it? It was like Gregorian Chant that made the Billboard Top 10.
Oh, yeah. Okay, and, I'm not in the music business, so I don't know that.
Okay, but anyway, he had legitimate credentials, and I don't know that I would say that Jaybird Records is a scam. It was like a co-op label. I wasn't aware that they were in business, but it was a publicly traded company at one time, and I don't think it's under the same umbrella as like a Black Rose or a Jet Speed or some of these other ones that you guys are bringing up.
No, I'm not suggesting they are. I just, when I spoke to Carlo and I said, can you give me one person who's done, you know, who's benefited from your services, they sent me to this group.
Right.
I'm sure you haven't heard of them. They're still playing local bars here in the Chicago area, so I don't know how beneficial that contract was.
This is Joe again, and I think one of the big distinctions to make, too, is that as artists, this is something that a lot of new artists don't really grasp at first. no record label is going to pay to record your stuff right now. No major label, no indie label, no one rides in on a white horse and pays for your recording time. Even if you get a record deal and the record company fronts you an advance to go make that record, that's a loan, and that's what we call recoupable. That's something that's going to be paid back out of your royalties. So keep in mind, any label that you deal with, whether they want you to pay to record up front or whether they put it on the back end as a recoupable, you as an artist are still responsible for every penny that gets spent making that record. That's the way of the industry right now, which is why I really advocate, if you're going to have to do that anyway, you may as well at least start with your own label, running a label just for yourself to put those records out. Since you're going to be paying those bills anyway, may as well take advantage of all the margin, too.
Joe, we heard from Ohio, we heard from California. Are there any other states here and the money that you gave to him?
Anybody else want to speak up that participated? I guess not. I guess either we've heard from some folks or some folks just want to stay lurking in the background. And that's okay. You can also, if you want to email me directly and I can pass your stuff along, or if you just want to leave a posting about this on spinme.com, we still would love to hear from you. I know a lot of folks have posted comments at spinme.com every time we've run a story about this, and people have talked about dropping $500 or $1,000. The other thread about this, too, is that the numbers tend to be very small because it is very, you know, they all become small claims court issues, so that no one is in the hole for enough that would trigger a significant lawsuit. So even if you did go into a lawyer and they would even say you have a case, but you would spend 10 times on the legal fees what you would get back from that, unless somebody decided to start a class action suit at some point. And I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know the merits or the relevance of that, but that's what I've been told again and again, that frustrates prosecutors, it frustrates attorneys, that the numbers, even though, again, $500 is a lot to each of you guys, it's not a lot to most attorneys, and they usually just have that bad news of call it tuition. So one of the reasons that we're having this call today is to provide a little testimony, provide a little feeling that if you were part of this scheme, don't feel bad. These guys were expert salespeople. And any kind of company like this that operates this way definitely has folks working for them that are really skilled, that are really using the language and the things that are going to make you feel comfortable and confident about signing on the dotted line. And whenever you're dealing with any company, I would really urge you to hop on the internet, go to the library, check things out, find some folks that are having some success with that strategy or with that company. Definitely talk to folks first before you part with such a huge number. Who else has a question or a comment or something that they'd like us to focus on?
I have a quick question for you.
Go ahead.
I'm a label owner who's released, I've produced three compilations with emerging artists on them since 1999, and I've never charged a fee to participate in my compilations, but I've always suffered as far as my advertising budget, and I know that if I did have a minimal fee, it would also work kind of as a filtering process, as well as help me to kind of build the budget for the project. I don't promise a lot. I've done all three of the albums that I've done have been benefit CDs for Rain, and but what I'm thinking in the future, if I'm going to continue to do any more of these, to have a minimal fee, like a $50 or $100 fee that I could, you know, put towards an advertising budget, and maybe a lot, like a certain number of CDs free and clear to the artists as payment for that. I want to kind of enact that, but I'm afraid of how that will come across, because I know that, you know, when I see as an artist the charge to participate in things like this, it kind of puts, you know, because of situations like these, it puts up, you know, a red flag that I don't want to participate in that, because, you know, you never know what you're getting involved in. How can I come across to, you know, other artists that I would want to participate in something like this, that I'm not going to be one of these people that just takes their money and runs and they don't get anything out of it?
I think that's a great question. And one of the things that you can do, I've put together compilations myself, and like you, didn't charge for it. I used other parts of my business to subsidize the cost of that production. And in your case, where you're just running the label, it's difficult because you know, putting out a record costs a good amount of money if you want to have it properly promoted, if you want to have it distributed, etc. And at the same time, there are a lot of folks that the pay-for-play compilation industry is out there, and it's not even a gray area. It's just the fact that a lot of compilations don't go anywhere for two reasons. One is they're either poorly produced, in that they don't have a flow, they don't have what we call a modality to them, so that to the listener there's not a flow, or there's not, it doesn't really make sense to the listener. The other thing that happens is that at radio, at press, and everywhere else, folks are deluged with compilations, and it's very difficult, unless you have, like you have, a charity angle or some other story that goes along with the compilation. It's very difficult to tell a story about a compilation, and therefore it's very difficult to get attention. And
how I've done mine in the past, all three of them are cover albums. Two of them are just 80s covers, and one of them was of a particular band, which made niche marketing a lot easier.
Exactly. And so that kind of niche, that kind of story that the thing tells, that I think is what separates a really good compilation from the other stuff that's out there. The problem, too, with compilations is there are a lot of companies out there that will say, all you have to pay us is X amount of dollars, and we'll throw your song onto the compilation, and the compilation will get service to X amount of radio stations. There are a handful of people that do this right, and there are a huge chunk of people that do this not so right. And again, you have to answer your question as the label owner, provide really clear details about what people are going to get in exchange for that fee. If you want to frame it up as, to participate in the compilation, you need to buy X number of copies wholesale, that would be a great way to do it.
I hadn't thought of that angle. That's a really good one.
Yeah, because that way people know that they're going to get a tangible product for that fee. And that's what, for you as a label owner, that's the angle you should be pursuing anyway, because it's the kind of product that bands should be able to buy from you wholesale so they can sell at their gigs or sell online or what have you. That, I think, for you is going to be a way to move product. And then for bands, it becomes another item in their catalog that they can sell at gigs, that they can sell online, etc. That's the kind of thing that sets you apart from the stuff that when I worked in radio we would get in the slush pile, and there's not, you know, not a whole lot of impetus. If you just get 10 disconnected songs that come in on a sampler, unless you have a personal relationship with the person that's sending that to you, there's not a whole lot of impetus for you to slap that in your CD player. And you're usually just going to assume that you'll get the full albums from each of those 10 artists anyway. So that's one thing. Like anything else, if you're going to participate in the compilation thing, make sure that you know what you're getting out of the deal, and make sure it's something that you're going to be proud to point out and be a part of. And I think the kind of thing that you described is exactly the right kind of compilation to be a part of.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. That definitely gives me some ideas.
You're welcome.
Joe, Danielle, I'm going to cut out of here, and I just wanted to know if there's any other questions, comments that people had that they wanted to add in, because like you, I've been researching Talent UK and 97 Radio and Carlo.
Anybody want to step up and ask another question or get some more closure around this issue? All right. I think they're either burned out or just lulled into submission. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate the work that you're doing to keep tabs on this as well.
You as well. Thank you, Joe. And you can reach me at Fox Chicago if you want to talk about this further.
Thanks so much, Danielle. Have a
Thanks
great
so
day.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
We have 15 more minutes on the conference bridge. If anybody, David Hooper is on the call with us. And for you guys that don't know, David and I run a couple of different services for musicians where you guys can join us and learn in depth about what to do to grow your audience, what to do to give up your day job. Unlike some of these other services, we're not going to ask you for hundreds of dollars up front. What we do is work with folks either one-on-one or as part of a membership package, and we actually do have many, many artists that we're working with right now that are really happy with the service that they're getting. So what we do on indiebiz.com, which is the membership site we run, is we have calls that are kind of like this all the time that allow folks to come on, ask us questions, get really specific feedback, and I'd love to take the next 15 minutes for people to just to kind of throw out any kind of questions that you have about the music industry in general or this issue in particular, and we'll do our best to try and answer them for you. Anybody want to just chime in with a question or a comment? Anybody still alive?
Joe, I was curious what you thought about Taxi.
A lot of people ask me about Taxi, and I know Dave gets this question a lot, too. And I've known a bunch of folks that have served on the A&R panel at Taxi. Taxi, I think, is very... Taxi is one of those services that you get out of it what you put into it, and if you have a product, if your songs are very strong and you have something that works for the opportunities they have, you can get something out of it. I know that Taxi has a much stronger track record of placing songs in film and television than they do of getting record deals, but that's okay because I think that's a long-term, a more lucrative opportunity for you guys. So the real trick with Taxi is making sure that you're sending stuff in that's really tailored to the opportunities that they post. If you're the kind of person that's going to send your thing in at every posting they put out, their panelists are going to know you as kind of a knee-jerk artist, and you're not, you know, what they're really good at is working with artists who have a real strong niche, who have a really well-defined sound, and the better, the easier it is for people to talk about your music, the easier it is for them to place you with someone that can do something with that. I know a lot of folks that are really happy with the service they've got from Taxi. I also know a lot of folks that have been disappointed. And I think that one of the nice things is that Michael and the crew at Taxi are really open about posting their success stories, and they're also very open about talking about the things that haven't worked so well. So to them, I think you go ahead, investigate them. If you think it's the kind of thing that'll work for you, then it can be worth something pursuing. You can also check out any number of different tip sheets. David runs a tip sheet at krtipsheet.com. There's another tip sheet called Bandit Newsletter that is really great. They're out of the UK, but they also do a US version. And I think tip sheets are a great way to dip your toe into that without necessarily committing to the kind of dollars that Taxi asks for. And you can get on track with similar kinds of opportunities.
Okay, great.
I would say it helps if you're flexible. A lot of people get into Taxi because they think that Taxi is going to bend to meet them. But really, what any of these tip sheets are about, it's the film supervisors, they know what they need, and you have to change up your stuff a lot of times in order to get them to be interested in what you've got. So the more flexible you are as a writer or producer, it helps if you've got your own recording equipment. There's people making really good money doing this kind of stuff, really good money. But it's not, most of them are not bands. Most of them are like writer, producer, arrangers. that skill set. Not to say a band couldn't do well, but they're not looking for bands, as Joe said.
Right. Okay. Great. Well, that sounds good.
Any other questions? Go ahead.
Do I got a comment about Talent 2000? Well, not really Talent 2000. Really, just about anything. And that's just use common sense. Ask around. Do a search on Google, the internet. Any of these music thoughts, Indie Girl, any of these mailing lists. Just ask around because people have used them before. And before the internet really popped up, there were some that had been around for years. And I mean, 20 or 30 years. And some of those guys are still around. But you're seeing a much shorter lifespan for quote-unquote kind of shady operations. And the reason is people are talking to each other. It's easier for people to communicate with each other. So I would ask around. Just because one person had a bad experience doesn't necessarily mean that you will. And I don't necessarily even believe in the Better Business Bureau, to be honest with you, because everybody can. You could give $1 million to the church and you're going to piss somebody off. But 1,200 complaints at the Better Business Bureau, that should tell you something. So I would say just ask around and research. And there's a great, it's geocities.com/songchart is a great site that has just general information about these kind of scams. I think it has some specific companies as well. So any of you who are interested in getting more information to try to not get ripped off should check that out.
Well, I know that when we were talking, I looked on the internet and checked because you had mentioned, or Joe had mentioned Deftone Records, and I found a website on them, but, you know, you look at the website and they've got two artists, and one of the CDs they're selling is $4.99, and it's just, I mean, it's kind of like a no-brainer, you know?
And I would, and the trick with that is, any self-respecting record company is going to try and make sure that their catalog is listed on either, if not both, Amazon.com and CDBaby.com. And if their stuff doesn't appear on either of those sites, they're either really new at this or they're not trying. Because all you need to do to sell your stuff on CDBaby is pay them $35. And you're in the catalog. And if you're not even going that far as a label, you are really just not interested in selling that many records.
Guys, SJ Tucker in Memphis.
Hey, SJ.
What's up? I've got a question on something that's maybe slightly larger, quote unquote, more official scale. Jody and Dave, also, do you have an opinion on joining NARIS, as in to join or not to join? Because it hadn't even occurred to me until today.
I think it's worthless. And I was a member of the Memphis chapter.
Uh-huh.
You get cheap CDs from them, like $7 each.
Uh-huh.
But other than that, I haven't seen them really do much.
Now, here's where Dave and I disagree. I'm a member of NARIS, and I think that depending on the chapter, you can get a lot out of it. I know the Philadelphia chapter, where I came from, you get a massive amount of value from that associate membership, but different chapters are run by different people, and so like anything else we've talked about, investigate what you're going to get from that money. You can't become a voting member of NARIS and participate in the Grammys and whatnot unless you've had your name on about 300,000 units. But if you want to join an associate member, talk to somebody about what programs are available to you, what you get out of it, and that varies city to city. And I think, Dave, too, that they've done a lot in the last 2 years since there's been that big leadership shift to kind of change their perception and add a lot of value. So, but it does differ city to city. I've heard different things about different chapters.
Well, the voting membership, when I was a member for about 9 years, and they, when I was a member, and this may have changed, but they didn't really check out sales. You just had to have distribution. Because NARIS is really for the art aspect of music. That's why you see a lot of weird people win the Grammy Awards. It's not like Dick Clark's Awards where it's just based on sales. Just try and see that it works for you. But I would do research, and I would do research about the organizations like Music Cares and see how much of that money actually goes to help people. I was doing research on their board of directors, the past staff. Michael Green is no longer involved as the president, but he still has a lot of his followers in there. And I would really look at it, especially, SG, I know you're coming from like a political and social, I mean, there's stuff that you care about, and, you know, I would research that and just, you know, make a decision. And that's basically why I dropped out of it after 9 years, because they weren't doing things that I agreed with.
Well, if I tell you what, Dave, if I find out good things, I will definitely let you know.
Yeah, please do. But yeah, John Horniak is the guy that you want to talk to down in Memphis. He's got an office on Beale Street. It's cool. He's a cool guy.
All right. I'll write his name down.
Hey, Joe, it's Jessica from Show and Tell, and you're right, Angela, who the Philadelphia chapter, she's hustling me to join because I want to get involved with that Grammys in the School segment, and I actually just got an email last night about that they're doing like a listening party, like where they're, you know, going to review your CD with, you know, some famous composers and arrangers and whatnot, but the only deal is, you know, that you have to be a member. So I was thinking, should I or should I not? And I'm glad that she brought that up, because I was debating if I should spend the $100 or whatever and go for it, or save it for something more important.
Yeah, I
got you back.
It really comes down to understanding what you're going to get out of that. And I think, again, the Philadelphia chapter is one of those chapters that really has taken the lead, and they do a really strong networking and interaction stuff about every month. And then there are smaller breakout things going on every other week, basically, but they're a little less, they're a little looser and not as organized. And if you're the kind of person that thrives in that environment, if you can like make spending the time on that worth it, then it's definitely worth joining. So like anything else, investigate what the return on investment is going to be. And if you feel that you're going to get a lot out of it, then it's worth it. And the great thing about the all of these NARIS chapters is that the boards are public. The you know, a lot of the membership is public, and you can call people up. You can call different people up and ask, you know, what am I going to get out of it, and is it right for me? And people will give you their honest opinion.
Okay, thank you.
Excellent.
But that, I think that comes back to, again, when evaluating any membership or service or whatever, the more that you triangulate, the more that you can find other people that have gotten the results that you want, that will point you in the direction. And if you're not finding anybody that's stepped up and used that service, then the only excuse for that is for the company to say, we're brand new, and put this charge in your credit card, we'll accept your credit card and refund the money if you don't get the service that you want. Putting it on a credit card gives you additional protection that within, depending on your card, within either 30 or 60 days, you can dispute that fee and protect yourself that way. So if the company doesn't accept credit cards, or doesn't at least accept something like PayPal, if they're hustling you for a money order, that's usually a red flag. But there's got to be a facility there for you to protect yourself so that you can get that money refunded in the event that they vanish off the face of the earth. Well, we're heading up to the top of the hour. We have time maybe for one more question if someone wants to throw it out. Going once, going twice.
This is Brian from Charlotte.
Hey, Brian, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
Good, thanks. What can
I do for you? I was wondering where you see, there's lots of indie artist opportunities these days, your own website, other people's websites, playing live. I was wondering where you see indie bands making their money.
Well, indie bands, where we are right now, all musicians are going to make their money from direct support of their audience, first and foremost. That's where the bulk, at least two-thirds of your money, is going to come from over time. The other third is going to come from your songwriting
and or placement of your songs in things like film and television, I'm messing around with a nugget of an idea called Multiple Streams of Music Income. If you guys are familiar with like Robert Allen, he's written this book, Multiple Streams of Income, and there have been all kinds of different spin-off things. There are lots of different streams of income that are available to you as a musician. There are a couple big chunky ones. There are a couple good steady passive ones. But the three big ones are the ticket sales from your live appearances, merchandise that you sell directly to your audience, and that merchandise includes CDs as well as T-shirts and other stuff, and royalties from your songwriting or placement in TV and film. Those are the three big areas for you guys to make money. And even if you get a record deal, that you know, all the record deal does for you is give you a little bit of infrastructure. You still have to do the work to make those sales and connect to your audience. That label's not going to do that for you. All right, it's up at the top of the hour. Once again, my name is Joe Taylor from SpinMe.com. Thanks to David Hooper from IndieBiz.com. Thanks to Danielle from Fox News in Chicago for stopping by and helping kind of taking on the unofficial co-moderator role. And thanks to all of you for spending this hour with us. This audio is going to get posted within the hour to the front page of SpinMe.com. So go ahead and tell your friends, let folks know that they can come in and listen to this call. And thank you for joining us, and hope to see you around very soon.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You're welcome.